Brad Sesmatt Show, broadcasting live from the Skyview Network Studios.
It's good Tuesday. We are all over the place in today's show. Peter King is going to join us here momentarily via Skype. SI.com senior NFL writer, the Monday morning quarterback. Always good to catch up with Peter on the national view of not just the Cardinals and their disaster. But I want to talk to Peter. Had a great note, Peter did, about the ineptness of the Cleveland Browns and the Julio Jones trade. If you follow your NFL, most of you do, whether it's fantasy football or just the league in general, you would know that Julio Jones absolutely destroyed Carolina and is absolutely destroying everybody out there. Now, he's got Denver this week, which will be interesting. But the way that trade went down in 2012, where so much was given up and people were up in arms, and I look back at it, Peter will have that, plus the obvious stuff. What does he see that is wrong with the Arizona Cardinals, and can they recover from this 1-3 start? All with Peter King. That's right around the corner as the Cardinals get ready for Thursday Night Football. Yogi Roth's going to be with us today via Skype. Yogi, Pac-12 Network analyst. I'm going to talk to him about where Manny Wilkins is, even with the injury in terms of development, and Brady White. Also, what's going on with U of A and Khalil Tate, their 17-year-old quarterback who played in the fourth quarter. Does Rich Rod go the direction of Khalil Tate for Saturday's game against Utah? U of A always plays Utah tough. Am I right on that, E? It seems like every time that U of A plays Utah, they find a way. One of those matchups.
I don't know if Utah has beaten U of A since they've been in the Pac-12. If they have, it hasn't been very often. They are certainly kryptonite.
It's one of those matchups where, for whatever reason,
even when Utah's the better team, U of A figures out a way to win, whether it's snowing in Salt Lake City or it's hot in Tucson. So,
well, I talked to Yogi, too, about Oregon-Washington. You think that's going to be a game?
Or
does this the brand Oregon,
just, it, the Oregon
not what
is,
it was?
Oregon is just so far off the radar that, I mean, they can't stop anybody. They have no defense, and they're playing a team that not only can score points, but that has proven that they can shut down good offenses. So I don't foresee that being a close game.
So in Washington just made mincemeat out of Stanford. That was not even a contest Friday night.
We were all waiting for Washington to play someone.
Somebody, yeah.
And they had a close game in Tucson the week before, and they came out on Friday night and just, I have never seen a David Shaw team
dominated.
Get sideways like Washington made them. Usually it's the other way around.
So we'll have Yogi Roth with us. And then Michael Fabiano, your fantasy football questions. Had a bunch of people send them in to me earlier today. So we have got questions already for Michael Fabiano, NFL Network senior analyst on the fantasy front, the Hall of Famer. He joins us from the NFL Network studios. Always good to have Michael. Very popular part of what we do. What do you do with Tom Brady? And they play the Browns this week. I mean, you have to play him, but you have to also ask the question. So yesterday was one of the busier sports days that we've had in our little neck of the woods in a while. We were working on projects here after the show yesterday, and about 12:30, Eric came in and said, the Diamondbacks let go of Stewart and Chip. No, it was even later than that, maybe. And I'm working on stuff, and I said, well, I'll go to the press conference. I want to go. It's time to go. And Jordan was already over at the Cardinals. There was no need to go down there because they're not going to say straight up what's going to happen. So I don't need to go there and just get, you know, the runaround. And if Carson's going to play or not, we'll figure that out. So I go to the Diamondbacks, and it's a 3:00 press conference yesterday afternoon. And I understand that Carson Palmer's injury is something of significance, very significant. But I don't know, when a team blows out their general manager and manager on the same day, you have to balance those two, right? Which is the bigger story? Which is there more interest in? Well, people say it's got to be the NFL. I think there's got to be a balancing act. And the Diamondbacks called this at a point where there was virtually impossible for many media to be there. So I'm there. Jody's there. Jody Jackson is there. Steve Gilbert, Nick Pecoro, the beat writers, Jack Magruder, Happy Jack. Mike Farron, who does a terrific job, he was there too. And there were some people in the back, but by and large, it was a pretty sparse gathering for the general manager and the manager being blown out. I was angry yesterday because I'm just tired. I was walking into the ballpark yesterday, and I've been on that patch of where the ballpark is when it was a cotton field. I played stickball on that cotton field with Jerry Colangelo and Joe Garagiola Jr. and Rich Dozier. We made a little diamond. I did shows out. Eric, were you and I together when I did shows out of the ballpark when they were building it? We had the construction guys.
Nope, that was before my time.
Before your time. So
that was a long time ago.
Might have been Mitch.
If it was before my time.
Might have been Mitch. Mitch Otto, who's here at Skyview. But I did shows like where the press box is now. They let me sit on some, you know, when you go into a construction site and they have paint cans that are all emptied out, or those big tubs, and you turn it upside down. I actually sat on one, and I had a piece of plywood that I set our broadcast stuff up on, and had the subs come in, and then we went and buried a time capsule out in center field. We had fun, which you should do when you have a stadium. The time capsule's still out there. And we just did a lot around it. And I was thinking about it yesterday as I walked in there. Yeah, I was the guy on the air all night after they won the World Series. Yeah, we were down in Tucson for the start of it. We can recite a lot of great history in the Diamondbacks. But suddenly it hit me as I'm walking in that there's been nothing really good around this team since, I don't know, 10, 12 years now. I keep going down there and I keep seeing general managers come and go. It doesn't matter if it's Josh Burns or in the interim, Jerry DePoto. Jerry DePoto deserves some credit. Kevin Towers came and went. Dave Stewart comes and goes. And so I'm kind of in an angry mood. And I sit down and I just wanted some explanations. I'm getting texts from fans, friends that are fans, saying, I'm just done with this team. Why can't they seem to figure it out? And so I asked the question, well, Peter King here in about 5 minutes. I asked the question to Ken, and Eric, I thought I was just kind of babbling when I just said, Ken, directly, why can't you get this right? Or something to that effect. And from there, I got a lot of explanations about the Padres, the Rockies, the Cubs. I got an explanation about the Diamondbacks' financial shortcomings. I got an explanation about how Joe Garagiola Jr. didn't have any experience and they won, and Dave Stewart didn't have any experience. I got at the end that the Diamondbacks are going to lean heavily on the people that they interview for the job about what are the problems internally. I got, we might use a search firm, we may not. You saw, what did you take out of yesterday's press conference?
Let's see. Two things that really stood out to me were Ken Kendrick comparing the Diamondbacks to the two bottom feeders in the NL West, San Diego and Colorado. Your fan base has dwindled. You had the lowest attendance this year in the history of the franchise. Your TV numbers are way down. Do you think your
fans... They came out today, by the way, and they are way down.
Do you think your fans want to say, hey, we compare favorably to the Rockies and Padres? That was the first thing. The second thing that crossed my mind, Brad, that I was thinking about, and I had a couple, I wouldn't say debates, but discussions with people, is whoever the new GM is, are they going to come in and say, you know what, we need to trade Paul Goldschmidt? Because the farm system is so depleted. Mm-hmm. And Pedro Gomez told you on the show months ago, if the Diamondbacks were smart, they would follow the Kansas City Royals blueprint. Start over, build through the farm, develop your players.
Pittsburgh Pirates,
yeah. Be patient. And if the new GM has that blueprint, he's going to go to Ken Kendrick and Derek Hall and say, you know what, we got to trade Goldie. And we should probably trade Zach Greinke too.
When Derek said he or she as the next general manager, yep. Did that strike you?
I didn't hear that, but I know that was part of the discussion.
And I followed up with Kim Ng.
And something we've talked about, yep.
Yep, and Derek
who is with the Dodgers?
Major League Baseball now.
Major League, okay.
So Derek did admit, yes. Well, first he said what was to be expected. I can't comment on that, but he said, yes, I have worked with Kim, and she's great. She's terrific. So they went into a lot about analytics. Most fans don't care what a war is. They don't. I mean, they do care about what a war is when it's around the world or involves our country. They don't care when you say war for a baseball game. They don't. You can try to stat people to death and sabermetric people to death, and I think there is something to that. I'm not downplaying it, but trying to sell this that it's going to be longer than a two-year run. If you're a wannabe general manager, okay, and you come to Arizona and you're sitting there in the interview process, doesn't it have to be in the back of your head? Hey, so I got like 2 years to figure this out. And I don't know, I've got the Giants and the Dodgers in front of me. Why do I want to come here when there is a air of maybe the ownership and president are going to overrule moves that I want to make.
Valid point. Very valid point.
So if you're Josh Burns, Jerry DePoto, Kevin Towers, Dave Stewart, all of them are going to have stories that are circulating about their time in Arizona.
Another thing that popped into my brain yesterday was I'm wondering if Chip Hale is going to fall in line with the Buck Showalter, the Bob Melvin.
Maybe.
Who am I forgetting? The other ex-Diamondback manager who has gone, A.J. Hinch, who has gone on to other places and made the playoffs.
He was just a little ahead of his time.
A little ahead of his time, yeah.
Or he was not in a dysfunctional situation.
Because knowing Chip, as we know Chip, he is going to want to get another job, and he is going to want to shove it right back in the Diamondback's face if and when he gets that job and if and when he makes the postseason, if that happens.
Do you interview Mark Grace and Matt Williams?
I would interview Grace. I probably wouldn't interview Matt. I mean,
it's because Matt's already done it,
yeah,
and it just didn't go well in Washington.
And Grace's personality may fit, especially if they tear down and build back up.
It may or it may not.
Yeah, it may. It may or it may not.
Here's the thing. You and I have been doing this for a while, and you're 40. I'm 51, okay? Grace is my age. So when he's got a 21-year-old that rolls in there now that's got a different mindset, different mentality than maybe what he had, is it relatable? Is that what Matt faced when he was in Washington? Some would say, yeah, that's what he faced, and he was too rigid. I don't know that. I would hope in either case, because I like both of them personally. They're having their coaches' meetings this morning. You know, I asked yesterday about are they going to consider within, and what could they do with some of the bench coaches and people that are in the postseason? Do you wait it out and pursue those bench coaches that are waiting to get that managerial spot? And I think that's a way that they should go.
I do too.
I don't want to see a retread. Do you?
No. No. And with Grace, if they did hire him, I mean, there is that, although it's been a while, there's still that baggage attached. And you know the Diamondbacks are all about winning.
From his off the field
stuff. Yeah. You know the Diamondbacks are all about winning the PR war.
But I think, Eric, I think he'd been through that stage. I would move past that myself. Grace would immediately get people interested and excited. It's a link back to the Diamondback team that won the World Series, okay? So's Craig Counsell, who's in Milwaukee. So's Jay Bell, who's in baseball. There's quite a few names that could take them back and get the fan base back. Something that I don't believe that's the best way to go, but I think with Derek and how Derek operates from a PR standpoint, that would make sense. It would. All right, the Suns last night, they played, and they won their first preseason game. They play tomorrow night. Manny Wilkins not going to miss extended time. And the Carson Palmer thing's just up in the air, and we're going to talk next with Peter King about that. Peter King, the Monday morning quarterback, right around the corner. He Skypes in tonight. Brad Sussmat, Sports Football AZ Show, is on Fox Sports Arizona. We'll get the title right. On Fox Sports Arizona tonight at 6 o'clock. That's tonight at 6 o'clock. This segment of the show brought to you by Subway. Subway Eat Fresh appreciates Subway and their support. Subway with catering for you this weekend. Think of your catering needs. Think Subway with all the football games. Subway Eat Fresh. Back with Peter King. Peter King joins us now, the Monday morning quarterback. Always good to catch up with Peter. MMQB.com, SI.com, all things around the National Football League. Look, I could ask you about the Cardinals and 1-3. You want to talk to me about something, though, Peter? It sounds like right off the top.
Yeah, I want to ask you the first question in this interview, and that is,
fire away.
If I walked into a sports bar right now in Scottsdale and I said to the bartender, all right, who do you blame? What would he say?
He would blame Carson Palmer for sure. Everywhere I go around town, doesn't matter if it's Scottsdale, I was up in the White Mountains over the weekend, a little bar there, a little corner nook, 10 people gather around the TV. Carson Palmer looks old. Carson Palmer looks washed up. That was the responses. Carson Palmer clearly is the person that the fans are looking at and saying, it's his fault that they're in this mess. I don't agree with that, Pete, but I think that's the response. I know that's the response that I've seen and have gotten around town.
I mean, I guess when I watch them right now, I would say that I would say a couple of things. Number one, I think when your quarterback is struggling, especially when he's struggling completing balls downfield, and his completion percentage certainly is down, then I would start throwing the ball to the tight end more. I'd start throwing the ball to the backs more. But again, Bruce Arians is not going to change who he is and not going to change what he's done because Carson Palmer and the passing offense and the offensive line, I might add, you know, are not playing as well as they did at their peak last year. And I think I would also say that, you know, I do think even though that I think Chandler Jones has been a positive, no question about it. I do think that, you know, they've got to put more pressure on the quarterback. There's no question about that.
I think Calais Campbell falls under that category as well. We're not hearing Calais' name very much at all in games, and he is supposed to be a disruptor. Bruce was on him last year. And I would agree with you about Chandler Jones. The back end of the secondary, you know, Rashad Johnson leaves, and they still got guys running free. And Ty Matthew had just two tackles. I don't think he's even close to 100%. I think that's a big part of the issues that we're seeing out here. Would you agree on that?
Yeah, I mean, I have not watched tape of their defense, so it's hard for me to point a finger at anybody. But I just know that, you know, I think back to sort of the, you know, the classic Cardinals secondary, which it's funny. The classic Cardinals secondary is not really a secondary.
Right.
Because you also have to add the linebackers in there because safeties, you know, Johnson, Jefferson, Matthew have been playing linebacker in a big way ever since Todd Bowles kind of invented that. And
Buchanan, and, too.
Yeah, and made that really a part of made that a part of what they do. So, look, I also think this, that every year in the NFL, we play four games or three games or even five games, and we say, okay, it's over for this team that is 1-3 or 2-3 or whatever. It's over. Some teams, you know, it's over for. It's over for the Cleveland Browns.
Right.
It's over for the Cleveland Browns in August. But, you know, the reason why I don't say that about Carolina or about Arizona is that I've seen them play too well. All of these players didn't go to seed overnight. And so I'd wait a while before I filed the death certificate, quite honestly.
Of the 2-1-3 teams, though, of Carolina and Arizona, which team does concern you more?
Probably Arizona, because I still think Carolina is in a much easier division. And so, to me, I look at Carolina and I say, well, unless something really strange happens, they're going 4-0 against New Orleans and Tampa.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, or should. And so when I look at those two teams, I say that Arizona just has a tougher road. And the division is just tougher. The schedule overall is tougher. And so that's why it would concern me more. Not, I mean, I don't think the Cardinals are playing worse than the Panthers right now, but it's just that the division they're in and the competition they face is just premier.
Talking with Peter King, the Monday morning quarterback, the next four games for the Cardinals, Thursday at San Francisco, the Jets on Monday Night Football in Glendale, Seahawks Sunday Night Football in Glendale, and at Carolina. So the next 4 weeks will be an adventure for sure. Peter, I'm curious from your view about Thursday night football in general. The quality of football on Thursday nights, a lot has been said and written that maybe it's not as good. Is there an overload of football? What's your view? That the road team usually doesn't win on Thursday night football. Cardinals are there this Thursday night. What's your view of Thursday night football in general and the quality of it?
Well, I don't think the quality in general is as good as Sunday football, but that is a study that would have to be undertaken because it figures that if you have less practice time, I mean, I remember I forget who it was with the Patriots, but I read it. One of the assistant coaches with the Patriots, and now I forget who it was asked about playing the short week game earlier this year. They played Houston on a Thursday, and they said, well, you know, the week of the game, we don't practice anyway. And he said it just as a matter of course. And I think everybody said, what, you don't practice? And quite literally, all they do is walkthroughs that week. So you can't really do anything much in terms of adjustments at full speed. You just don't go full speed. That would be a problem, I think, if Drew Stanton has to play. Mm-hmm. If I were the Cardinals, I would want to have a couple of really good practices with Drew Stanton this week. But having said that, I think the one thing you have to ask yourself, Brad, is that, you know, the players, when they went in the new collective bargaining agreement now 5 years ago, basically agreed to play the Thursday night games. And I think one of the reasons that they did is that, in essence, Thursday night football adds about $4 million when you break it down to every team's salary cap. Mm-hmm. So do players want to sacrifice $4 million per team per cap year to not play Thursday? In other words, I think the question cannot be asked in a vacuum about Thursday and by totally blaming the league. The players could stand up and say, look, we're not playing Thursday night football, and make it a big negotiating point. They haven't done that to this point. So even though the football isn't as good, I don't think it's going away.
Let's turn to good football before I let you go, and that's Julio Jones. You wrote about him in MMQB on Monday, and fans can go check that out at mmqb.com. And you went back and showed the ineptness of the Cleveland Browns, just simply saying this is the deal that went down. For those that haven't read it, just a nutshell of what Julio Jones did on Sunday, which was remarkable, and how the deal completely fell apart for Cleveland.
Well, at the time, remember, in 2011, the Browns had the 6th overall pick, and the Falcons had the 27th overall pick. So they had to move up 21 spots, and to do it, they gave 2 1s, a 2, and 2 4s. That's a lot. Yep. To move up from 27 to 6. And so while Julio Jones led all receivers last year in receiving yards, while Julio Jones this year leads all receivers in receiving yards, at the same time, you've got the Cleveland Browns, who basically pick 5 players, none of whom suited up in an NFL game on Sunday, and the best of which probably has been Brandon Whedon. And so, you know, it's Brandon Whedon, Trent Richardson, Owen Marisick, the running back from Stanford, and Phil Taylor, the nose tackle. I'm missing one more, but in essence, 5 guys. Oh, Greg Little, the receiver from North Carolina. And none of those guys are on Cleveland anymore, and not a single one of them right now is a regular player in the NFL. None of them played on Sunday. So it's a pathetic example of what has happened with the Cleveland front office, and one of the reasons why, again, they're the worst team in the league this year.
Ineptness. Unbelievable. Peter, appreciate the time and the visit as always. Enjoy your week. Thanks.
Thank you, Brad.
There's Peter King, the Monday Morning Quarterback. Appreciate Peter being with us. Always good to catch up with Peter King, SI.com, MMQB.com, Sports360AZ.com. We partner with the Arizona Republic, AZ Central Sports. I'm Brad Sussmat. Let's focus in on the Pac-12 for a couple of minutes. Yogi Roth with the Pac-12 Network Skyping on in as we get into a week where ASU may be without Manny Wilkins. Rich Rod's got to start looking at 17-year-old Khalil Tate. And the state of Arizona looking very much like not going to be part of the Pac-12 South race. Have I summed it up correctly, Yogi? Or are you seeing it differently down here in Arizona?
No, I mean, I thought heading into the season, you know, when we talk in the off season and media days, and you know, you looked at these two schools, and I felt Arizona State was going to struggle to make a bowl game. You look at Arizona, and the same could be said now. You know, just so many injuries across the board. Obviously, the quarterback position in this conference is vital with the variety of defenses you see, and then also the youth, specifically at Arizona, and how many people they're playing. I mean, last year was a linebacker position, right, where so many people got banged up. this year it's the running back and the quarterback spot. So it's a bummer for both of these teams, and it's kind of crazy where we're talking Colorado now competing, you know, they're in the mix for the South, and it's still early, but we're not talking about these two teams. We're talking about maybe them even making a bowl game.
You're working on The Drive around ASU. It's coming out the first part of November. You want to talk about that a little bit and what you're working on there at the Pac-12 Network?
Yeah, it's awesome, man. I mean, we've done The Drive. Now this is our fourth season, and our team is awesome. You know, Michael Talajan, he's the director of it. I get to produce it and narrate it. And every year it's kind of had its like a different vibe to it. You know, year one, your viewers saw us. We were embedded within ASU, and it was great. It was the year they went to the Pac-12 title game, played Stanford at home. It was crazy, right? And then the last couple of years, it shifted. The year after that, it was all UCLA. Last year, we went back to a two-team format. This year, we had so much good feedback from all the schools and the fans that we said, you know, what if we created a doc series where we got a deep dive at each team and celebrated each university, student-athlete, staff, et cetera, and that's what we've done, you know, and you never really know how it's going to work when you just do one per team. Mm-hmm. But the cool thing is that our production crew, you would love this. They're literally in a massive RV driving across the Pac-12 footprint. Former athletes at Oregon State and students there, Taylor Cavanaugh, Matt Wilcox, and they're dropping in and they are fully embedding for the week with each university. And sometimes you need to do these and it's these one-offs. You get a day or two and it's not great, but they've gone after it. So I'm excited about ASU. You know, Coach Graham has always been phenomenal. Arizona episode just aired. Rich Rod, you see him on the sidelines, you kind of always wonder what he's saying. Well, you get to see in that film. So it's been a cool process for us, and it just shows, I think, the pedigree of the brand of The Drive. And for me, as one of the guys on the ground floor with that, to see every other network basically copying it and wanting to do it, whether it's, you know, the Florida State show on Showtime or whether it's the SEC Network and utilizing members of our production crew that we've used prior to in the Drive series, you know that you started something that has success and other people are trying to do as well.
Talking with Yogi Roth, Pac-12 Network Analyst. Let's dive deeper then into Arizona State and the Manny Wilkins injury against USC and what happens now at quarterback. We don't know if Brady White will go this week against UCLA. Let's talk about Wilkins and the development before the injury that you saw out of him.
He was balling, you know, every week. You know, I rank my quarterbacks for what it's worth, and he was the fourth in the Pac-12 heading into this weekend's game. And, you know, I just got done studying the film, and he's playing at a high level. You know, he really is. He's seeing the field extremely clear. In that system, you've got to be able to get really wide, see the whole field, but then get really narrow, whether it's checking down to a wheel route. We've seen them run so many times, just understanding the run-pass option. And where he's actually been most impressive to me, and you wouldn't think it unless you studied it, is that under center, you know, there's times where it's play action pass. He's turning his eyes to the defense, getting his eyes back around, surveying the field, and delivering a dime. So that to me was extremely impressive watching him. And for him to go down, especially the way that it went down, it was just too kind of those last two plays of the first half, both of them, you just kind of cringe when you watch him on tape. So I hope he's all right, but I like Brady White, man. I've been around him since he was at Hart High School. Both of these guys came through the Elite 11. He's gifted. You know, he's a gifted passer. You can tell he got more comfortable as the second half went on. So it's a drop-off because Manny was playing at a high level, but Brady's ceiling is as high as anybody in this conference. I mean, he is a pure passer. So hopefully Manny comes back, but I think that they'll be fine.
I think the good news here for ASU, Yogi, is that they can turn around and hand the ball off and stick it in the belly of Balazs and Richard, assuming they're healthy when they're on the field. I like the 1-2 punch down here. What do you see out of those two?
They have to. You know, their defense has struggled. You know, I mean, look, SC made some great plays. Sam Darnold, he showed why, at least I think he's going to end up in New York, you know, for the Heisman when his career is said and done. I think he's that dynamic in the pocket. You saw subtle movements. And there's times where they run a trick play, the ball drops, he picks it up, completes it down the field. You know, he's about to throw a pick, he resets, throws a touchdown pass. I mean, they went up against a dynamic quarterback in the pocket when you're bringing unique pressures. But my point is that they need to run the ball and they need to steal possessions. And that, if I'm Arizona State, that's my game plan because their defense has just struggled. You know, you look at every game this year, for the most part, they're giving up chunk yardage, you know, and a lot of it. So very similar to you know, when you play teams like a Cal or you play explosive offenses, you want to run the ball and take possessions away. And I think they need to do that. I think they got to slow down the tempo a little bit, milk the clock a little bit more, not dramatically away from the philosophy of Ty Graham wanting to go. But I think you got to look at the realities of where you are defensively right now and run the ball, try to take up as much clock as you can. And I'd feed those backs as much as I could. And hopefully they're going to be healthy because they're going to need them for them to get the next couple wins to be bowl eligible. Because those wins, you look at the schedule, there isn't a gimme on this schedule. You know, right. There just isn't. You look down the list.
Sun Devils have UCLA, of course, on Saturday night. Let's switch over to U of A. Tough game on the road at Utah this coming weekend. It's just a battle of attrition, it feels like, in watching Rich Rod. He's down to his fourth quarterback that he's used this season. And maybe, Yogi, he has to go with Khalil Tate, the 17-year-old. What's your view of him and what's going on in Tucson?
Yeah, well, you know, if you remember back on signing day in the Pac-12 Network, we kind of rank by position. And we had Khalil Tate ranked as a top athlete in this year's class out of anybody who went anywhere. And there was obviously a lot of pressure. And then we're seeing some of their impacts now. But I think he's that. And I can remember him at the Elite 11, and he's playing quarterback, and then all of a sudden he's playing running back, and then he's playing wide receiver. And he's just like, I want to make plays. You know, clearly, you know, he went to Arizona to play quarterback. And now I think if you burn the red shirt, especially for a guy who can grow so much, you know, we always say the term, you know, what's his ceiling? Khalil's ceiling's really high. And in this offense, it's such an instinctive one that I think if you're an inexperienced player, whether it's the running back, we've seen them rotate so many guys, or the quarterback, you don't have a lot of time to think, to process, to confuse yourself at times in some more intricate offenses, specifically in the passing game. So I think for him, it's quick hitting, you know, make it a one-cut decision, a one pre-snap read, one post-snap read, and let this young man go. And I would ride with him. You know, Dawkins has clearly been playing well, and if he's healthy, he's the better player. But either way, you've got to have a package now for Khalil Tate because you don't want to just have burned his red shirt and not gotten a lot of the development. It's not even the productivity, but I think it's the development because this is a really young team. You know, you look at how they recruited, how many young players they're playing in the back end. Obviously, the running back position, we can kind of go through each position if we wanted, but they have a bright future. And even if you look at them defensively, in what they're doing, and you watch them on tape, you can see them getting more and more comfortable in the scheme that they're operating in with the new defensive coordinator, Marcel Yates.
Talking with Yogi Roth. Before we let you go, Yogi from the Pac-12 Network, Washington at Oregon. Who do you like this weekend?
I mean, it's UW, you know, and it's a no-brainer. You look at what they've done really all season long. We called the game there early, week 3, and their non-conference games, they did what you would expect a top team to do. You know, they never played to their competition. Then you see week 3 or week 4 on the road at Arizona, they go to overtime and they struggled stopping the run. And what I noticed is that it was the first time they went up against real speed throughout this season. And they overran so much. You know, it's like they were trying too hard to make every play perfect on defense. And they came back last week against Stanford and, you know, they did the unthinkable. You know, in terms of number one, they had minimal unforced errors. But number two, they won the physicality battle. You know, they were the more physical team. And if you looked heading into the game, offense, defensive front, it was advantage Stanford. What's the kink in UW's armor? It's their offensive front. And they didn't flinch, man. And then you add in their skill players who, obviously everybody knows John Ross, explosive, reminds me of Rocket Ishmael from way back in the day. But Chico McClatcher, I think he's the most underrated wide receiver on the West Coast, and one might even argue in the country. I mean, he's a real deal guy, and Dante Pettis is as good a route runner as there is. So I'd look for them to break the streak in losses to Oregon. And when you look at Oregon, when you look at these scores the last couple of games, I called the Colorado upset loss, and they just got done breaking down the film this morning of Wazoo. And when you watch the process and the flow of the game, it doesn't look like what the score indicates. You know, they didn't look dramatically bad. Offensively, they're moving the ball. They're getting chunk yardage. They're doing what you think. Their problem is they have really struggled on defense. You know, whether it's missed tackles, even if they're fitting it right, they're just getting blocked. They're not getting off of blocks. So I think UW rolls. I think it's one of those games that you can't wait to see how Oregon responds. Because now, and you guys know this, especially for big brands, and I think all college football teams in this conference think this, everybody thinks you're going to the Natty, then you lose one. And you think, okay, I'm going to the Rose Bowl, then you lose another one. And you think, all right, win our division, then you lose another one. And now, what are we playing for? for them, you look at Oregon's schedule, they might not make a bowl game. You know, again, what are the wins when you look down? I mean, I had them winning the last two games, putting them in position for a solid season. They lost those two. I'm curious to find out who this team is, what their resiliency is like. And you got to remember that every kid that's recruited there is going there because they have this crazy expectation of, all right, we're going to the Rose Bowl. We're going to win a championship, et cetera, et cetera. Well, those are out the door. So now it's about coming to compete. And I can't wait to see how they respond because they are going to get hit harder, more often, and more consistent than they have all season long. And I can't wait to see how this one plays out because I would expect the Mark Calvert team to respond and at least compete at a high level throughout this entire game, being the rivalry that it is.
Big time college football. Looking forward to it this weekend. Yogi, appreciate the visit. Thanks.
Always. Thank you.
Yogi Roth, Pac-12 Network there with us. Appreciate his time via Skype. Sports 360 AZ. We partner with the Arizona Republic, AZ Central Sports. And, of course, our television show, Brad Sussmatz, Football AZ on Fox Sports Arizona. We're back with more after this timeout. And now from the NFL Network, right there on set, it is the Hall of Famer, Michael Fabiano, Inside and Out, the fantasy football focus from Michael Fabiano. All right, a lot of questions about Tom Brady and strategy this week with other Patriots. What do you do with Tom Brady?
Start him.
Yeah.
I mean, listen, that's it. He's going to come back salty. He's got a good matchup. And outside of a hurricane going through Cleveland, and there could be some bad weather going up the East Coast there, there's no way that Tom Brady is on my bench in his first game back. This is what you've been waiting for. You've been waiting for him to come back and make an impact for you. So you'd have to have a pretty elite quarterback on your roster alongside Tom Brady to even think about benching him.
Okay, and I have Matt Ryan. So what do you advise there, Michael?
Start Tom Brady. You know, I was dead wrong. A lot of analysts were dead wrong about Matt Ryan last week. Maybe we overestimated the Panthers' defense. But when you go to Denver and play a road game there, mm-hmm. where Andrew Luck was held to fewer than 11 fantasy points, I'll tell you something right now. I know Ryan's been great, but look at the schedule. He's played some cupcakes. Denver's not a cupcake. And I can't tell people to start him based on the numbers that I see.
Okay, and last week, Michael Fabiano said pick up Terrell Pryor. Michael Fabiano said pick up Mike Wallace. I wanted Terrell Pryor. The guy I was with was a Nimrod and took Mike Wallace instead. You were mm-hmm. dead. You were dead flat right last week, as you are most weeks on these guys.
Yeah, it doesn't happen very often.
Oh, get out of here! Shut up! You're the Hall of Famer. You know, what are you talking
sometimes
about?
Sometimes we get lucky. Yeah, Steve Smith is actually a good pickup now. You know, he was coming back from that Achilles and mm-hmm. started slow, but now he's starting to see more targets, and Wallace is sort of seeing fewer. But I mean, Pryor, he's a great pickup now. Think about it.
Yeah.
Because when you picked him up initially, that was with Josh Gordon coming back. Well, Josh Gordon is gone now. So Pryor is the number one wide receiver in Cleveland, at least for the next several weeks, until Corey Coleman comes back.
All right, let's get into the mailbag here. Thinking of giving Palmer one more week after that, replace, question mark.
Is he going to play this week? I don't even know.
Up in the air.
Exactly. So it depends on your alternatives, to be quite honest with you. And that's what it always depends on. If you've got a guy, Joe Flacco is somebody I told people to play last week. Mm-hmm. You know, he's got a good matchup this week. I've been telling people to pick up Dak Prescott forever. I mean, he's got a good matchup this week. Cincinnati hasn't been great against quarterbacks. Carson Wentz, you can pick up off the waiver wire. He's playing Detroit, another really good matchup. So it depends on your alternatives, but I don't know if I'm starting Carson Palmer this week, and I've been a guy who's defended him in the past because he's played really well and he's been very consistent. But this year, you're starting to see some inconsistency, and I don't like to see that from a fantasy standpoint.
Let's go to Alex K. He sends in a tweet to Sports 360 AZ. Would you trade away Lacy for Graham? I've got Zeke, Blunt, and Howard at tight end. Tammy at tight end.
Oh, man. You know what? I wouldn't do it. I like to lowball people first without insulting them. So I would try to make a trade offering up another running back and see what happens. I mean, to be honest with you, like, there's good tight ends on the waiver wire. I mean, the tight end position is a little weird this year, right? Tyler Eifert's coming back this week. Zach Ertz is coming back. He could be on your waiver wire right now. Zach Miller's been really good. So I don't know that I'm giving up a running back for Jimmy Graham, especially a good one.
Keith, two trade offers. I get Macklin and Newton for Palmer and D. Thomas. Trade two. I get Hill for D. Jax.
First one, you almost always want to get like the best player in the deal. So if you're getting Cam, that's pretty good. Give me the second trade again.
Hill for D. Jax.
Jeremy Hill?
Just says Hill.
Yeah, I mean,
that's what I'm guessing.
That's you know, basically if you need help at wide receiver and the other team needs help at running back and you're making that switch, it's a fair trade.
Is it time for me to trade Todd Gurley from Dave? I think we get this every week now.
I would trade for him, to be honest with you. And number one, his value is low. He's got some really good matchups coming up. He's playing Buffalo this week. I know he's got down the road. He's got Miami. He's got Atlanta. He's got New Orleans. So the schedule is going to get easier for him. I think the real problem with Gurley, and listen, Gurley was my number one player in standard scoring leagues. In PPR, it was Antonio Brown. And that's come to bite me big time. Hmm. But the schedule to start the year has been pretty tough for Gurley. You know, he had one favorable opponent, and he burned him for 20 points. But a big problem is the Rams' offensive line stinks. It's worse than it was last season, and they need to fix that. If they can fix that, Gurley's going to get back and put up some numbers. But right now, I wouldn't trade Gurley because his value is low. If you really are dead set on trading him, wait to trade him until after the Buffalo game because I think he will have a much better game. A
couple other questions from Michael Fabiano, the Hall of Famer, right there at the NFL Network. Start two of three, John Brown, DeAndre Hopkins, Zach Ertz, full PPR.
Well, I'm probably starting Zach Ertz because it's a great matchup. And then I'm starting Hopkins over Brown, but boy, he's got a bad matchup this week against Minnesota. John Brown came out and had a big game. No question about it. I have concerns with him if Carson Palmer's not the quarterback this week.
From Go Cubs Go, what do you think the value of Deion Lewis will be once he comes back?
To be honest with you, that is a really good question because last year, he basically was the one running back who made it easy for fantasy owners to decide whether or not to start or sit him. Because Belichick didn't go committee. He used Lewis almost exclusively as a featured back. Was that going to happen when he comes back? How's the knee? I would roster him and kind of sit on him, but I don't even know when he's coming back, to be honest with you. It's not like, well, he's going to miss six games and then he'll come back right away. That might not happen. So yeah, who knows if he comes back before or after New England's bye week. And again, if you have reserve spots, I would certainly put him on a reserve spot and kind of sit on him. But I don't know that he's going to be the same player he was last year coming off of that knee.
One last question out of the mailbag. This is from Sean. Should I be worried about Latavius Murray?
No, because you didn't draft Latavius Murray to be an elite fantasy running back. You drafted him to probably be your RB2, your flex, right? Had a touchdown in each of his first three games. And then last week I said, hey, sit him. And Baltimore basically stopped Oakland's running game because they had four touchdown passes against him. But Murray's also a guy who's, I mean, he's the lead in what is to some point a committee. He's not getting a lot of touches. I think he's averaging about 13 touches a game, so it's not a ton. But Murray's been what we kind of projected him to be, an RB2.
Senior fantasy analyst Michael Fabiano for NFL.com right there at the NFL Network, the Hall of Famer with us. Before you go, some players you like this weekend looking at matchups. Maybe some you're thinking, I'm not so keen on it.
Well, we already talked about Matt Ryan. Ben Roethlisberger, start him. Derek Carr, Rivers should be a high-scoring game there. Carson Wentz, like those guys. Again, you could start Matt Ryan, and maybe I'll be wrong again, but playing in Denver is a scary proposition for me. Matt Stafford's a guy I've been a fan of, don't like the matchup this week. Tyrod Taylor without Sammy Watkins, on the road, bad matchup. Running backs that I would play this week, continue to play Melvin Gordon, have faith in Todd Gurley this week. C.J. Anderson should be fine. Love Jordan Howard, talked about him the last couple of weeks. I definitely would play him. Running backs I'm sitting, Ryan Matthews, matchup plus possible committee. And one thing that fantasy owners need to keep tabs on this week is Tevin Coleman. They're playing in Denver, and he's got sickle cell disease. Mm. And if you remember, Ryan Clark had that issue too, playing in high altitude. So Coleman, number one, might not play. Or number two, if he does play, he might be limited. So obviously I wish the best for him. But you have to keep tabs on this situation as a fantasy owner, no question about that. Moving on to wide receivers, with or without Cam Newton, I still think Travis Benjamin's a good start. Emmanuel Sanders has been great. Get Julian Edelman back in your lineup. I don't trust Randall Cobb because he's done nothing to make me trust him probably in the last year plus. You probably have to start Stephon Diggs. You don't have to like it. Bad matchup against Houston. And on the flip side, Will Fuller's been ridiculously good.
Yeah.
I mean, you want to talk about the best rookies. It's Fuller and it's Zeke of the non-quarterbacks. And Minnesota is just – that defense is on fire mm-hmm. right now. So Fuller and D-Hop, maybe you have to play them. Don't have to like it.
Stay well. Appreciate the time as always, Michael. Thanks.
All right, pal.
Michael Fabiano right there from the NFL Network, NFL.com, senior fantasy analyst. Always good to catch up with Michael every week. Sports360AZ.com. We partner with the Arizona Republic, AZ Central Sports. I'm Brad Sussmat.